Welcome to Behind the Game, the Kids in the Game official podcast, where we cover the intersection of youth development, sports, education, and technology in the New York City landscape.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 19 of Behind the Game, Kids in the Game's official podcast. I'm your host, Paul O'Connor. On this episode, we were joined by Natalie Hummel. She is the co-founder and executive director of Kids in the Game, which is in Bend, Oregon. If you didn't know, there are actually two Kids in the Game, so we decided to bring her on and learn about all the awesome initiatives and work that she is doing at her Kids in the Game. Let's jump in. Okay, we are now joined by Natalie Hummel. She is the founder of Kids in the Game, and I know this may confuse everyone to start, but there are actually two Kids in the Game entities. There's one on the East Coast in New York, and there is one in Oregon. So just want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself. We're gonna, you know, have some fun in the beginning here in terms of how many times we've been reached out to by parents or families or partners confused about why they're now talking to someone in New York or Oregon. But Natalie, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And yeah, I think it's great that we're talking the two Kids in the Game, because there has been a lot of confusion over the years. So KidsInTheGame.org, the nonprofit version. we've been around for about 10 years, and our mission is to help low-income kids play sports. So I love that we're both kind of sports-based, we really help kids, low-income kids, get access to after-school sports, both, you know, high school, middle school sports, as well as recreational sports. And our flagship program is the PASS, which provides up to $150 to cover the registration fees. And our PASS program right now is available in 7 states, so kind of in the Pacific Northwest. But we're actually rolling our program out nationally in response to the pandemic, because youth sports has been really significantly impacted around the country. And there are, you know, more and more families that are not going to be able to afford youth sports when the physical distancing gets relaxed. And so we are actively raising funds to be able to bring our program nationally. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And we've certainly had some funny exchanges with people throughout the years about which kids in the game they were reaching out to. So I appreciate the difference there. But even before we go into all the craziness that everyone is experiencing, want to give you an opportunity to share with everyone, you know, how you got to starting Kids in the Game and your background there. And then, you know, why, what was the motivation to start Kids in the Game?
Sure. So I was a multi-sport athlete growing up, played, you know, multiple sports. Sports was a huge part of my life. I, played multiple sports in high school, lettered in 9 different letters in high school, and then went on to play volleyball in college for a Division I school. And when I got a degree in business and went off and had a business career in coaching and consulting and doing a lot of different things. And I kind of kept saying, you know, hey, I want to make a bigger impact. I my coaching business, I was working like with one individual, and there was only so many individuals I could reach. And so I kind of had this mantra of wanting to make a bigger impact. And I, when I was kind of in the midst of searching of what that meant for me, I just had this calling to do something bigger. I didn't really know what that meant. I hadn't really thought about it being nonprofit work at the time. But I got introduced to a gentleman, John Ballantyne, who's one of the other founders, and he had this idea of doing something to help youth sports. And it just resonated with me in a very deep level, especially when I learned that 65% of kids were not playing sports, age 9 to 13. And that 70% of the kids that were playing sports dropped out by the time they were 13. And I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, like that is, you know, tragic. And so we kind of learned that the number one barrier that was keeping kids from playing was financial. So that's kind of where we got our start, was how can we, you know, what can we do to help low-income kids get access and help cover their registration fees. And over the years, our program has changed like the way that we've been able to do it, but our mission has always been the same, which is kind of leveling the playing field and giving access to those kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's super important for organizations like yours to exist, because we've just seen such a drastic change in youth sports, even from when I grew up. I mean, I'm 30 years old, so, you know, when I grew up, travel teams weren't as prevalent. I think they were just starting to really take off then, and it has changed so much, the landscape itself. And I think a lot of it is information that is shared with parents and where they think their kids should be, and the importance behind it. And really, and we can, you know, we're going to dive into all this stuff later, but you know, I think before 13, 14 years old, it's skill development and having fun. And if you just do those two things, then we've done our job as coaches and as administrators and, you know, people in this space. And I think we've gotten away from that a little bit. And I think there is a very good opportunity for organizations like ours and people like us to come together and say, hey, since we've all kind of noticed we've gotten away from it, and we have this for the first time ever, the world is paused, there is an opportunity here to work together to try and reframe some of our priorities in youth sports, which is, you know, in a time that has been pretty sad the past month, somewhat exciting and something to look forward to. So we're hanging our hats on that. But I appreciate your thoughts there. I wanted to pick your brain about how you've adjusted your programming over the past month or so to continue reaching your families and your kids, and you know, what approach you've been taking there.
Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately for us, because we help cover the registration fee for sports, there isn't really, we're not doing direct programming like you guys are, where we're working with our families. We've been trying to come up with ideas to, you know, keep families moving and keep, you know, encouraging physical activity in any way that they can do it. But really what we've been focusing on is how can we be prepared when sports turns back on? And because we know that there's going to be more families that need support, there's going to be, you know, huge areas of the country where not only has the family been impacted and not able to afford the sports, but some of these sports leagues aren't going to be available. You know, a lot of these youth sports providers, they exist season to season, registration to registration. And if you can imagine, you know, having a spring sport that you collected all the registrations, you bought the uniforms, you're ready to kick off, and then boom, you had to shut it down. You had to refund all the money, but you still paid for those uniforms, you paid for the field, you paid for, you know, you had these costs. And so a lot of these youth sports organizations are having to close their doors. And so we're really hoping that with our program, that we can help kickstart some of those youth sports programs to get them back going by getting registrations going quickly, by helping families to register quickly when they find out about our program. So, so unfortunately, we haven't been able to do a lot to help people in the moment, but we are taking this time to prepare for the future and to be ready.
It's totally okay. Still working from home. That's how it goes. Yeah. So, okay, that makes sense. What are some of the best and most effective virtual practices that you've seen? I mean, a lot of people and orgs that are doing direct programming have, you know, similar to us, have completely shifted to online and Instagram lives. And just wanted to see, you know, I know you're paying attention to all this stuff. You know, what are some of the best practices you've seen?
Yeah, well, we've seen some really innovative things. You know, I've seen a lot of, you know, digital courses and things that kids can do. You know, for kids, unfortunately, you know, their screen has become their best friend. And so they're just, you know, buried in their technology. You know, that technology is highly addictive. And so they, you know, once they have, you know, this unlimited access to it, and you know, parents, I have two kids, and you know, they're teenagers, and you know, they're spending a lot of time on their device. But I have seen some things where it's like some challenges and some ways that kind of incent them to exercise. And I know for my son, you know, when he does exercise, he you know, begrudgingly does it, but it does shift his mood, you know, and I do see the difference in how he feels. And, you know, he's got more energy and he's like, okay, yeah, that was great. Let's, you know. And so I just think I've seen, you know, some organizations using videos and using challenges that have been, you know, been good. And also just having fun, you know, I've seen some dance ones and I've seen some silly challenges and things that have gotten kids, you know, outside. And one of the other ones that I saw just recently was kind of some challenges around like soccer, like dribbling the ball and like, you know, doing a personal best and posting a video about it and yep. things like that, that is like in their sport. And so I think some of those things have been good, but you know, it's, unless they have a parent who's really helping them do that, it's hard.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think some of the best ones we've seen, to your point about the, if they're fun, if they're somewhat challenging, and then if there's a sense of community around it, and if their friends are involved, and if they see other kids within the program doing it, I think those have really taken off, which have been very cool to see. But certainly a fine balance between how much they're on their screen, which we were all already worried about before all of this started, and now it's almost like there's not much we can do because they have, you know, for whether it's academics and schoolwork or for fun or for connecting with family and friends, it's all through a device. And so, it, you know, it's funny, like we've all kind of just waved that out the window, like, hey, we'll deal with screen time when this is over. But right now there's not much we can do.
Yeah.
You mentioned a couple of them earlier, but, you know, what opportunities do you think will arise from this?
Oh, you know, like you talking about the super competitive youth sports, I'm really hoping that there's some shift away from that. You know, I think that some families are being impacted financially and they're just not going to be able to afford some of those sports. I'm really hoping that we see a resurgence of recreational sports. One of our core beliefs is building multi-sport athletes. All the research shows that for long-term athletic benefit, for long-term health, multi-sport athletes, and, you know, going from sport to sport to sport and changing it up keeps kids engaged. It builds better athleticism. It builds more lifelong skills. It prevents injury. There's just like all this really great research around it. And unfortunately, in our culture, we've gotten so used to, you know, like we just have this mindset or this belief system that, you know, you've got to specialize at a young age if you want to play in college. And it's just really interesting. I don't know if you watched any of the draft last night, but yep. So many of the people that were drafted in the first round were multi-sport athletes. They a lot of them discovered football
late,
you know,
late.
In high school.
Yeah.
Really late, you know, and they were track and they were soccer and they were this and they were baseball and they, you know, they're just, they built their athleticism playing a ton of sports. Yeah. And so I'm really, that's one of the things that I'm most hopeful for is that there's a shift. And I think, you know, I have several friends who had multiple kids in competitive sports. And now that all that's shut down, they're actually able to see how much time they were spending getting their kids to all these different activities. And yep. Now that they have had this break, it's kind of like, I think that for a lot of them, it's going to be hard for them to go back to that.
Yep, I completely agree. Why do you think, or where do you think it really came from, this notion or this messaging that you have to specialize early? Was it directly correlated to the competitiveness?
It's a good question. I think it comes from something deep in our American culture of you know, being the best, and yeah. And somewhere along the way that you know, participating in specializing early and paying for a professional coach early, you know, gives you some advantage. And you know, the only advantage I see is that it does, you know, unfortunately it's come down to, if you play early, you know, specialize early, you'll get to play in high school. But it doesn't usually translate into being a good college athlete. And it usually a lot of those kids peak in high school, you know? And so, I don't know how it started, but that, I think there's something about the American culture and I'm really hoping that it's just because there's so much research out there that it isn't actually a good long-term strategy.
Yep. No, totally agree. So we loved your video about the sports comeback. It was very powerful. So kudos to you for putting that together and your entire team, because that was very powerful. But want to give you the opportunity to talk about, you know, what partners were involved and how other people can get involved in that, and how we kind of as a whole can better prepare for when sports come back, because there's just a lot of things to be thinking about.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you for that. That was really my team that put that together. And I have some super creative people and working together, they really hit the message. And you know, I think it's interesting because a lot of times we take things for granted, and sports is one of those things where, you know, if you have your kids in sports and they're playing, you know, you just kind of take it for granted and you don't really notice all the benefits from it. You know, that you look at the research and you kind of know the benefits and stuff. Man, you take sports away. And so I think it's such a unique opportunity that everything shut down, that you actually are like, wow, I actually see what sports does for my kid. And I see what it does for myself. And, you know, it's like, gosh, it just reinforces the importance of it. And when you realize that low-income kids are 50% less likely to play one day of sport, you realize how much they're missing out on, that they're not even getting that opportunity. And so really for me, it's about getting, you know, it's going to take the entire country focusing on this and everybody contributing to bring sports back. And like I said, there's a lot of small youth sports organizations that have had to shut their doors, and it's not going to be easy for them to come back. And especially if they were in a low income area, because they were barely hanging on as it was. And so, you know, we just really believe by getting people to register for those organizations and getting the money flowing as a way to help all of those organizations, and especially helping those low income kids get those opportunities. So, yeah, if anybody, you know, wants to give to Kids in the Game, it'll help. It'll help every sports organization across the country, because we're going to help more people be able to register.
Yep. You mentioned the importance of, you know, our entire space and community coming together to help, you know, when we do reopen. And I fully understand that this is a loaded question and no one really has the answer, but when do you think is a realistic game plan and time frame for youth sports to come back?
Boy, that's I wish I had a crystal ball and could tell you. You know, we were kind of counting on fall sports coming back, but I just, you know, it's really hard to say, you know, because they're saying now that with the flu and with COVID, you know, that they're seeing that things can, you know, slow down over the summer, but there could be a resurgence back in the fall. So, you know, I don't know if fall sports will exist. And you know, it's probably like everything else, right? We need a vaccine and we need treatments and things like that. But, you know, there's good news out there. Like if you look at South Korea, they brought youth sports back, you know, very early, and they do have their kids, you know, playing again. And you know, so I think it is possible, you know, but I don't have the answers on that one for sure.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a extremely complicated issue. And I think what we're hoping for is, you know, we run summer camps as well. And that's kind of our next domino. And that's what we're really hoping, that even if it's a, you know, a lesser version, or, you know, enrollment is a little less than it normally is, but we can provide some sort of outlet, because I think even more than the kids, the parents are going to be dying to get their kids out at programming over the summer. Especially if we go through this entire spring and there's really no outlet for them, you know, what does that look like? Is it small games? Is it, you know, 3-on-3 basketball or 7-on-7 football instead of those large numbers that we usually see? You know, do you stagger times and different play, you know, in New York City, it's a little different, but do you have things in different fields? Like what creative ways can we do? That's what we're thinking about. But again, we're still waiting on the government and, you know, the American Camp Association and the CDC and all these, you know, the higher powers, you know, to help us. And I think in the youth sports field, like, we look to pro sports and we're going to do what they do. There's certainly no world that we live in that youth sports is going to lead the charge back before you know, the NBA or the NFL or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I want to dig into, you know, we've touched on it, but, you know, a couple ways, specific ways that, you know, the youth sports collective can prepare for when we come back and what that may look like. And maybe that's less pay for play and it's more in school leagues or more recreational leagues, especially below the age of 13. What are your thoughts on that and maybe even like specific groups or orgs and how we can all work together on that?
Yeah, I really do. I do think that the travel ball and the super competitive leagues and stuff will take longer to come back, which I think really is a good thing. And I think getting kids, you know, back just playing and having fun and, you know, will come first. And so some of those smaller leagues and formats and yeah, so that's kind of what I see happening. I don't think it'll start with the you know, really expensive competitive travel teams, because I don't think people are going to want to be traveling, leaving their hometown and having their kids exposed, you know, to that wide of a circle and things. So I can see recreational sports really playing a role in getting things going again. And you know, school-based sports and just like basic physical activity is, you know, because these kids are going to be out of shape. You know, I mean, there's just no two ways about it. You know, even these kids that were super athletes and doing all kinds of stuff are, you know, I'm sure, you know, I can think of all the kids that I've coached soccer, none of them are out there running and, you know, staying in shape. You know, there's a couple, our neighbor across the street, she runs track and, you know, I see her out there, you know, running and staying in shape, but there's a lot more kids that aren't doing that.
Yeah, for sure. No, for sure. Do you think, you know, because especially in youth sports, you know, we're usually a little bit behind the curve on some technology aspects, and there's a lot of groups out there that are doing a really good job with video and their digital presence. But do you think this will finally push most, if not all, youth sports and youth orgs into that video world and at least having an option for kids moving forward? Or do you think, and I'll frame it this way too, so that like part one there, or do you think we double down on in-person programming after this?
It's a good question. I don't really know. I mean, I know for, you know, there's a ton of real, like I said before, little tiny small youth sport providers that are, I mean, they don't even have a website and they don't even have electronic registration, right? They do in-person registration. People show up, they have a day at a park and people show up and they write checks and they can't even like, I mean, some of them are just starting to take credit cards, you know? So, you know, I don't see them offering, you know, anything video or, you know, they just can't afford it. And they're very, you know, grassroots. So I'm hoping actually that there's more of the grassroots, in-person, organic, sports, that come back first and small, you know, group. And you know, I think there's ways that you could do it even with social distancing that could be fun for kids, you know, like, I mean, you could imagine soccer, for example, having a, you know, a soccer ball, you're not allowed to touch it with your hands, you know, you kick it with your feet and, you know, it's like, you know, they're 6 feet apart and they're, you know, just doing some drills and, you know, that I think there could be ways, it wouldn't be traditional soccer, but you could figure out ways to get them out and get them going and running that would maintain, you know, the physical distancing that they need. And so, you know, I think there's creative ways that we could do some of this.
Yeah, for sure.
That,
for sure.
You know, I wish I had a crystal ball and could see what was going to happen in the future, but I do see some of those things, but I don't see it all going online. Cause I mean, that's the beauty of sport, right? It's what I love about it is it's that like so many kids today do not have real conversations. Everything is through their phone, a little text, a little this, you know, and sometimes I ask my kids like, oh gosh, how's he feeling about that? And they're like, I have no idea. Cause they don't ask those kind of questions, right? Yep. But when you're on a field and you're playing, you know when a person is upset. You know when a person is excited. You know when a person is fired up.
Yep.
Like, they get to experience all that being in person on a field. And that's the beauty of sport. You know, it's like they're communicating, even though, you know, they're really communicating, even though they may not be using words. And, yep. And you can't do that through a phone. You can't do that through, you know, a text message or a Instagram post. So,
yeah, totally agree. Where do you see some of the pro leagues, pro teams, and even, you know, potentially some of the major brands out there like Nike and Adidas, stepping in to help the youth sports world through this? Because, you know, we don't create the revenue that they do, and we don't have reserves like they do. Where do you think they can step in and help?
I think Major League Sports has a vested interest in helping kids play, and you know, we've been in conversations with them at the highest level, and they really see the value of what we're doing and the broad reach that a program like ours could have. And I do think that they see that as part of their role, and it's their future, you know, because with so many kids not playing and so many kids dropping out by the time they're 13, their fan base is decreasing. Yep. The amount of athletes that they have available to them are decreasing, you know, so they've got, professional sports has to do something to change the culture around youth sports, because, you know, if you look at the trends, they won't, you know, they're already seeing it. ESPN is another company that we've been in conversations with, and they're starting to see it in viewership, and, you know, because that generation, that younger generation, they're not as big a sports fan as the generation ahead of them, because they're not growing up in sports and immersed in it the way we were. And so, so I think those brands definitely have a vested interest in that. And same thing with companies like Nike and Adidas, they see it too. And they've really relied on Nike and Adidas and some of the major sports brands, Under Armour, have relied on kind of the high end sports gear that the more wealthy people buy. But they're even seeing, you know, they're seeing a huge dip in that now, and they're really see, you know, a big dip in that. And so they're starting for the first time to actually be impacted by the fact that not as many kids are playing sports. And I'm not even talking the pandemic, I'm talking like prior to the pandemic. Yeah. And so the challenge is with brands like Nike and Adidas, they're getting hit really hard right now, as far as, you know, people aren't going out and buying a new pair of shoes.
No.
And so I don't know how much they're going to have to give.
Yeah.
And they've also, like, Nike's given millions of dollars to COVID relief. So, you know, so it'll be interesting. But yeah, I think they all know that they need to do something, and they're all trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, this was awesome. I'm so happy that we finally were able to connect. We have just a fun question, and usually the question is, you know, usually we're doing this in our office in Manhattan. And we're asking people in New York, what is your favorite slice of pizza? So we're going to tweak that question a little bit. So we'll ask, you know, right now, what is your go-to takeout spot? So we'll give a little free promo to wherever you're ordering from right now.
That, I know, I was thinking about that. And we have several really good restaurants here in town that we've been, you know, it's just like we go from restaurant to restaurant when we do our takeout, because we want to keep them all around.
Yeah.
But we have a really good Vietnamese place here, Viet Pho, and that's probably our favorite takeout, because we all can get something that we love, and it's healthy and some really good food. And nice. I'd hate to see them disappear. So
that's great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
But we rotate, you know. You got to keep them all in business.
Yeah, you have to. Okay, so really quick before we get out of here, where can everybody find you on social and Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff?
Kidsinthegame.org, and we're on Facebook, Twitter, all those things is just Kids in the Game. I think most of us, I don't know for what you, because you guys use KING.
We use KING, but then really the only difference is if you search Kids in the Game, that's you guys, and then we usually have an NY after us. So that's kind of the big differentiator on social.
That's great. Yeah. It's amazing how many times people call us up and say, you know, I can't, why is your address Bend, Oregon? I thought you guys were in New York. And it's just so funny.
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, you got the wrong one. So
yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah, very funny. But Natalie, thank you again so much. We really appreciate it. And, you know, best of luck over the coming weeks. And, you know, I think we're all in the same boat. We're hoping to get back on the field and get back in the gym sooner rather than later. That is for sure. But thank you again for joining the podcast. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Game. Make sure to subscribe in the iTunes store and be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Kids in the Game NY and Facebook at Kids in the Game NYC.